for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. For 20 years, Jennifer Arnold has been training service dogs for children and adults with physical disabilities and special needs. Along the way, she believes she's learned a great deal about what both dogs and people need. Now, in a new book, she describes her training methods and how she believes people can learn to better communicate with the dogs in their lives. The book is titled Through a Dog's Eyes. Jennifer Arnold joins me in the studio, as does her dog, Butch Cassidy, who is, tell me the breed.
Butch is actually a mix between a standard poodle and a golden retriever. His mama's a golden.
Gorgeous.
He is about the sweetest creature God ever put on the face of this earth. So he is wonderful and a great ambassador for dogs.
How long have you had him?
Butch was actually born at Canine Assistance.
Wonderful.
And his mama only had two puppies. And she had to have a C-section. And the first puppy out, my husband, who is our staff veterinarian, handed to me. And it just so happens that turned out to be Butch.
You have truly a remarkable personal story. Tell us about it.
Okay, I'm going to try to do it with no tears, because sometimes that happens.
I understand.
When I was 16, I was diagnosed with MS. And what happened was I woke up one morning and I jumped up to go to the bathroom like I normally did. And I fell on the floor and was very confused and was hospitalized and ultimately diagnosed by a wonderful neurologist in Atlanta with MS. And he was so concerned about the fact that I'd gotten so bad so quickly that he really told my family that he was going to make it his mission to try to keep me from getting worse. But getting better wasn't really even an option at that point in his mind. And I was a brat. I mean, I was 16, which is a horrible time to be, you know, have that kind of change in your life.
Of course.
And I'm embarrassed having met the incredible people that I've met who don't let the fact that they, you know, they roll from place to place instead of walking slow them down. But I fell apart. And my dad, I was the fourth and final child, and my daddy was my best buddy in the whole wide world. And he had just read an article about a woman in California who was training dogs to help people like me, that people who use wheelchairs. Wonderful woman. And he called her.
By this time, you were.
I was not able
to
walk, so I was in a wheelchair.
Okay.
There was. And
which
I ended
you
up.
Not today.
No, I ended up using it for about two and a half years. But this woman in California couldn't send a dog as far away as Georgia. And so Dad got excited because we were always animal lovers. Oh, such animal people, especially from my mama's side. So Daddy said, if you need a dog, other people do too. Let's do this. And it was, he met with a CPA the Friday after Thanksgiving in 1980. They actually named it with my blessing, Canine Assistance. And 2 weeks later, he was walking home from my grandmother's house. She lived just a block away on a sidewalk around a park in Atlanta. And a drunk driver on a motorcycle jumped up on the sidewalk and hit him. And he died the next morning.
Oh.
Piedmont Hospital in Atlanta.
Oh.
And I was absolutely
devastated.
Destroyed.
Oh, forget about it.
I mean, I just said, this is... I stayed in the ICU waiting room overnight, and I kept thinking, if there is a God, I hate you. I couldn't help it. I was so angry, and I've since made such peace with that. But to me, at that moment, mm-hmm. the only thing that made this horrible life make any sense to me at all was if something I could do would somehow make it easier for other people. So, I mean, truly, Canine Assistance was what gave me the will to live. and it's been such a blessing for me to have.
Jennifer Arnold, she is the author of a new book. It's titled Through a Dog's Eyes, Understanding Our Dogs by Understanding How They See the World. She is founder and executive director of Canine Assistance. That's a nonprofit organization based in Milton, Georgia. It trains and provides service dogs for children and adults with physical disabilities and special needs. You may have seen a PBS featuring the organization in a one-hour special titled Through a Dog's Eyes. It aired in April 2010, and there is a series planned to launch early in 2011. Milkbone featured Canine Assistance is their most recent ad campaign. And if you'd like to join us, 800-433-8850. Jennifer Arnold lives outside Atlanta with her veterinarian husband, Kent, her son, Chase, three dogs, one cat, eight horses, and other animals. You must have a lot of fun.
It's a wonderful menagerie. We actually live on the property, on the Canine Assistance property.
And how many dogs are you training at a single time?
We have about 120 dogs in training at any given time.
And where do those dogs come from?
We are able to, we rescue as many dogs as we are able to. And when we first started, I was absolutely emphatic that we would only use rescue dogs. And over the years, I realized that that's not very fair to the dogs, because it's awfully difficult for most dogs to come out of a shelter environment and have to walk through the Atlanta airport. And it's just terrifying. But the dogs that can make it, we adopt. And then we have a breeding program just for our own dogs, so that we can start with the dogs as puppies and acclimate them.
I see.
And one thing that I'm very proud of, and one reason that I didn't want to use puppies to begin with, was because, you know, programs don't necessarily have a high graduation rate when they have puppies and they send them off to puppy raisers. And we've been very fortunate. We raise the dogs at the facility with the help of volunteers, and over 95% of the dogs graduate into service, which I think is fantastic. I mean, some years we have just maybe two or three dogs maximum that go out to private homes.
Wow.
So that makes me happy.
I want to go back to your own health situation. How did you move from that wheelchair after your father's death to the full life that you have now?
Well, I got lucky. I mean, I've had many people say, God healed you so you could do this ministry. And I don't want that to be true, because I know so many people who deserve it so much more than I ever possibly could deserve it. I have been diagnosed. They think that perhaps it was Guillain-Barré syndrome.
As opposed to
MS. And I do, after my son was born, I have continued to have some autoimmune related health problems that require lots of steroids. But, I'm certainly hanging tough. So
I'm so glad.
But, you know, life in a, I mean, how I've learned so much about being healed is not a physical process. And that's one thing that I've learned from the dogs, largely, is, you know, being healed is entirely mental and emotional, in my opinion. How your body functions is not necessarily what's most important. I mean, I know people who are high quadriplegics who are the most whole, healthy people I know.
Interesting. I watched the film that was on PBS. I saw the caring that you gave to those pups from birth, because unlike what I've heard from from other people, you said it was important for those pups to be handled, to be touched, to feel human contact.
To trust.
To trust that they would learn that that human is there to comfort, to love, to be with, to trust.
Absolutely. I am so horrified that anybody would ever think that it was necessary to be anything other than kind and nurturing to these incredible animals who put their own life every second of every day in the United States and in other countries. There is a dog who puts his life on the line, or her life, for a human being. How dare we think that we have to be, rough and forceful and dominating alpha. And over time at Canine Assistance, I learned that does not work. And really, at this point in my life, I think it is morally wrong and an incredible cruelty, and it's why I wrote the book.
You feel that kind of treatment simply develops fear in the dog.
It does develop fear in the dogs. And nobody learns well when they're frightened. That's just absurd. You learn well when you feel comfortable in an environment, and it's so easy to do.
Jennifer Arnold, her new book, which she says she wrote to give back to the dogs, is titled Through a Dog's Eyes, Understanding Our Dogs by Understanding How They See the World. And if you've just joined us, Jennifer Arnold is with me. She's founder and executive director of Canine Assistance. That's a nonprofit organization based in Milton, Georgia. She trains, provides service dogs for children and adults with physical disabilities and special needs. Now, I think it's important to talk about not only the training of these dogs that occurs from the moment they're born to how you then, as I saw in the PBS film, match up these dogs with individual owners. And I've used the wrong language because you don't do the matching at all. Dogs and the people do the matching.
And actually, it really is the dogs. I mean, it, and you have to see it to believe it. But what we do is if you're on the, if finally you have sponsorship, and obviously what, as a nonprofit organization who doesn't charge for these dogs, and we even provide lifetime care, food and veterinary care and recurrent training for families that can't afford it. So we bring them in for 2 weeks.
The people.
And we have a large group of dogs who are ready to graduate and who have the right, skills and temperaments, et cetera, for these folks. And then for the first 2 days, each person works maybe 4, 5, 6 different dogs that we think might match up well with them. And it is absolutely fascinating because you will watch a dog who has dealt with 10 other people and been polite, but not made any sort of emotional connection. And that 11th person, they look up in that person's face and it's like, dear God, I'm home. And the dog just relaxes. And you see this the most amazing bond. I just can't tell you what it's like. And then, so then we ask the people to write down the dogs they want the most. And they always write down the dog that loves them the best.
They know that.
Right.
Tell me about the people and how they come to you.
We are not a first come, first serve. I really want to say that because if people need us, I don't want them to hesitate to apply. That said, we have over 2,000 people on a waiting list with the capacity at this point to place about 80 to 100 dogs a year. And it's hard financially, as a nonprofit, obviously, in this economy, it's been horrifying. But we work with people who have all sorts of different conditions that inhibit mobility.
Such as?
Cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And we work with people who have epilepsy, also with the seizure response dogs. And when an application comes in, and it's available on our website, which is www.canineassistance.org, we evaluate how much a dog can do to help an individual physically, socially, and emotionally. And they're all given equal weight. And then how good an environment it is for the dog.
I see.
So if somebody really needs us, we try to get them in as fast as we can raise the money.
Talk about the individual who may have epilepsy and how those dogs somehow sense that a seizure is about to occur.
And I have to tell you, I had no experience before starting Canine Assistance with epilepsy. I hate epilepsy. I mean, it is the most horrifying. I just had no idea that people seizure to death. It is horrifying. All right, so we had a young man walk into our office one day and say, I have epilepsy. He had been appointed to West Point from the military, which is so hard to do. 2 weeks into his West Point experience, he had his first grand mal seizure.
Oh, my.
And he couldn't stay. So depressed. It was unbelievable. And I thought, we've got to do something to help this kid. So we started training the dog and trying to research and find out as much as we could. And we do a lot now, a lot of seizure response dogs now. That's kind of become one of our primary niches. We don't know yet to what stimuli the dogs are responding. We want to research it desperately. That's another, we need the money so badly to be able to do this. It is most likely to be smell-based because dogs have such an extraordinary sense of smell. And we have had dogs that have been able to anticipate the onset, though that's not something we ever promise, but dogs learn to develop the ability to anticipate onset almost 90% within the first year after placement with the individual.
Oh, my.
And they have anticipated when the person's in the other room, so I don't – well, I almost knocked over my water here. So I don't think the dog is cueing off a behavioral change.
Yeah.
And then we had a young man at LSU hooked up to the epilepsy monitoring unit to EEGs and had a video camera, and his dog alerted twice. They'd only been together for a few weeks. His epileptologist became an instant believer. But he had no changes in his brainwaves whatsoever.
And then what is the responsibility of the dog in that situation?
Well, alerting, if you have a dog that can anticipate onset, ultimately, I feel like we can make a major impact on epilepsy as a whole, because we have a number of clients who have had vagal nerve stimulators implanted that gives a pulse of electricity to the brain, and it has reduced the severity or, in a lot of cases, eliminated seizures. So you know, if somebody has a seizure, and we call them seizure response dogs because we teach the dog to respond in whatever way is most appropriate for the individual.
You had one family where a young child, while the parents were asleep, apparently begin to or be about to suffer a seizure, and that dog somehow alerted the parents.
Yeah, that's, you know, so for so many of our families, it having this dog and trusting this dog is the first time mom and dad can sleep in the same room and the child can sleep alone. And yes, the dogs will absolutely go wake up mom and dad, and they will stay after them until they get up, because dogs are remarkably caring creatures. And it's not just, you know, we work with great breeds, Labradors and standard poodles and golden retrievers, those precious
angels.
Oh, angels
gorgeous
on earth.
Yeah.
But, you know, all dogs are, they care so deeply about human beings, and we're all they have. I mean, you know, this is a man-made species. We are responsible for the development of dogs, no matter which evolutionary anthropologist you talk to. They will, and when they say this happened, they will all agree that the presence of human beings and the influence of human beings is what created from wolves the entire species.
You're also concerned with not only children, but adults.
We do work with adults.
As you've said, who have a variety of disorders. How does a dog help someone, for example, with ALS?
Yeah, our dogs are taught to do all sorts of behaviors on cue. They can retrieve things you drop, tug open doors, turn lights on and off, help with balance, go for help in an emergency, reposition you bodily. I mean, we have dogs that help, you know, roll over in the night, patients, so that another person can sleep all night. Mm. And they are remarkable. We had one dog in, and I think the story's in the book. He lived with a wonderful, wonderful man in North Carolina who was lived in a very economically depressed area, and his wife had to work full time. He had ALS, horrible disease. He had an attendant care for an hour in the morning and an hour at night. The dog's responsibility was, when he needed help, to hit the button for 911 to alert, and lots of our dogs are taught to do that. And one day he hit the button for 911, and when the rescue workers, who were well aware of his presence, came, this man had passed away with the dog in his arms.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
They are amazing.
Why did you title this Through a Dog's Eyes?
Because we mess up so much, and sometimes even not meaning to. I mean, there's so many people, myself included, when we first started Canine Assistance, who love dogs. And because we don't think about how dogs perceive things, we behave inappropriately. For example, someone knocks on your door and your dog barks. Our tendency is to say, quiet, quiet. And the dog hears, oh no, somebody's at the door. And we make it worse. And then we get more angry with the dog, and the dog gets more frantic. When we just stop and use our big, beautiful human brains and think, all right, now, what is my dog likely perceiving in this situation? A stranger has come. My dog very kindly alerted me to the presence of someone. And, you know, if you just hear your dog barking, you acknowledge that you hear them. I think that's a lot of the reason dogs keep barking, is because we don't ever tell them we heard. You say, oh, somebody's at the door. Ah, you love it when the UPS man comes. Don't you love it when the dog has, you know, he stops barking. It's fabulous. Very simple.
What about what happens when a dog has accidents.
Poor babies.
Poor babies.
You know, there are several different types of accidents, obviously. But, you know, dogs that have submissive urination issues, to me, are among the most maligned. You know, I even heard somebody recently say that her puppy was trying to dominate her through this behavior of peeing out of excitement when she saw the mom. All right, first of all, you know, young dogs have very weak bladder control. And so, in addition to having poor bladder control, urination is in the wild, even with you know, dogs in the wild, is used as a solicitation of maternal attention. Hmm. So the dog is really, in a lot of ways, saying, "I know you're my mom or my dad, and will you look after me because I'm just a baby." But we get mad at them, and we're told to toss them outside, or to, you know, to pick them up by the back of the neck, or, I mean, there are even people still who will hit the dog with a rolled up newspaper, for heaven's sakes. First of all, you know, dogs are going to grow out of that. But then as they get older, because we've mostly all heard now that dogs don't like to soil their den, dogs will, and that's very true, most dogs, unless they're just sick or they really have to go and you didn't get home. I mean, if you come home and find a big puddle by the back door, the dog just had to go so badly it couldn't hold it anymore. But dogs will run in the formal dining room, you know, where you only let that really special relative go because you want to be in the will. And the dog will pee on your oriental carpet. And you think that little rat went in the very place that's the most important. No, that dog went outside the den. They don't know from outside, for heaven's sakes. If you've got an oriental carpet, block it off.
Jennifer Arnold, she's author of Through a Dog's Eyes, Understanding Our Dogs by Understanding How They See the World. And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We're going to open the phones now. 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. First to Rochester, New York. Good morning, Linda. You're on the air.
Hi, Diane. I am very honored to be on your show.
Oh, I'm glad to have you, Linda. Go right ahead.
I felt compelled to call. First, Jennifer, I admire you greatly for talking about your losses so frankly and movingly.
Thank you.
And Diane, I admire your skillfulness and your caring when Jennifer was talking about her father's death. You very kindly and caringly gave her time to recover by talking at length about her program and her show. And I was just blown away. I'm in the
mental health
field. She's
wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
And I just wanted to tell you that you both brought me to tears.
Oh, well, I'm glad that you're listening, and I'm glad that you called, Linda. The whole idea of how we treat dogs has sort of gone off.
We've
on
gone
another tack.
We've gone in the wrong direction, and I will tell you that my book came out a week ago, yesterday, and my son, who just turned 8, awakened me at 5 o'clock in the morning that morning, and he said, "Mom, get up! Today's the day we start fighting for the dogs." And it's that really is, I've seen dogs give human beings so much. And it makes me so sad that somehow this alpha myth has gotten so popular that we've not only been told by professional dog trainers, that so-called professionals, that we should dominate our dogs physically and emotionally. We've been told that if we don't, we're wrong. And that's just absurd. The science doesn't back it up, and morality doesn't back it up. It's if we can teach a dog to do the laundry with a tiny piece of milk bone, I hardly think anyone ever needs to, you know, flip their dog over and growl in their face or yank on the chain or, heaven forbid, have the shock collar remote, which is becoming, there are more shock collars in use in the United States now than at any point in our history. Sad and wrong. We got to fix it.
And wrong. Jennifer Arnold, and the book we're talking about, Through a Dog's Eyes, has just been published. Jennifer will talk more about her work with the dogs. We'll take your calls and email. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. By the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at Hewlett.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Natasha Trethewey talks about her new memoir, Beyond Katrina, a meditation on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. It's about how the hurricane damaged her family as well as the area they lived in. Join us.
And Butch Cassidy is here in the studio with us. He is a beautiful combination of a standard poodle and a golden. And he has long, curly hair.
He does have long, curly hair.
Beautiful, Jennifer.
And, you know, I'm a little on the reason people started breeding these. They're called doodles. And,
yeah,
you know, the designer dogs, it freaks me out a little bit.
I know.
But I will tell you that because he doesn't shed, but he mats like crazy, so he needs a ton of grooming.
I see.
He's been clipped.
I see.
So if people are doing it just because they don't want a dog that sheds hair, probably not a great idea.
What
but
about
beautiful
these so-called puggles? Have you seen them?
I haven't.
You haven't? The combination
I've heard of it.
And beagle. They're darling dogs.
I have heard of them.
And I've heard a number of people getting
them. Well, you know, breeders will beat me for saying this. And I understand because their breeds are, especially the poor poodle breeders, because everybody mixes with poodles,
yeah,
it seems like, because they're brilliant dogs. But all breeds started out as a combination of something else. So sometimes I think I'm scared I'm going to be shot by breeders. I love y'all, I promise. But there is some hybrid vigor that is important in dogs. And, you know, these doodles are appear to be outliving, you know, living a little bit longer maybe than the purebred.
Really? Interesting. All right, let's go to Bristol, Tennessee. Good morning, Liza. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me on the
air. Surely.
I have a question for Jennifer.
Yes.
How do you feel about dogs being on a chain or tether from infancy, basically, until the day they die? Do you think that is correct as a society to chain up their dogs until they die?
Outdoors?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, no, I think those dogs would be better served by being euthanized if that's the life they're going to have to live. Dogs think that life is is a social sport. They're team players.
And Liza, why do you ask the question? I'm interested.
Well, I live in Bristol, Tennessee, and in Bristol and other communities throughout the country, it is an acceptable practice for people. Chain or tethered
dog. It's not. And I mean, it's acceptable perhaps from a governmental standpoint. It's unacceptable from a moral standpoint. It's just, this is a thinking, feeling being. Do not have them if you are not able to care for them physically and emotionally in an appropriate manner.
Thanks for calling, Liza. June Nadja in Taconic, New York. You're on the air. Nadja, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment about what you said, Jennifer, before about what training should not be.
Yes.
I think that that's a very important statement that is unfortunately, what you said training should not be, which is this whole dominance-based.
Which is wrong.
Yes, it's totally wrong, but it's unfortunately being perpetuated on television today.
Absolutely it is, and it's it's just wrong, and that's why I wrote the book, because somebody...
Yeah.
And, you know, there are great trainers out there who are screaming this is wrong, and somehow not everybody's listening.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it takes people like you putting that message out. My partner and I own a retail store and are always looking for dog food and supply retail store and always looking for new books to put on our shelves.
Good for you.
So it's really great because we do get a lot of customers, and we train our dogs using only positive reinforcement. And we do
Excellent.
Get a lot of customers that come in telling us, well, this is what we saw on television,
yeah.
And I think that, especially the kind of work that you're doing with dogs.
Another reason that I wrote the book is because I'm not a professional dog trainer. I really do not see myself that way. I'm sort of a relationship person. I have no compunction whatsoever about saying this is wrong. And it's not that it's a different method. You know, people will say, well, you have your method and other people have theirs. Yes, true. Some are absolutely great. Clicker training, fabulous. You know, positive reinforcement in any form is appropriate. Cruelty, i.e., having to be the alpha dog and all the ridiculousness, the absurdity of that, and shock collars, e-collars, excuse me, are wrong, period.
Thanks for calling, Nadja. Cynthia in St. Louis, Missouri is wondering what happens with the dogs when they're not needed anymore. Do they return to the program, stay with the family? How do they retire?
Yeah, our babies are, you can certainly, we are always would be happy to take a dog back. That rarely happens. And we remain in contact forever. Even if we don't provide the veterinary care, coordinate it.
I see.
And so, when a dog is about to retire, rather than making that dog leave their family, we'll just place another dog in the home, usually of the opposite sex. And if, heaven forbid, and it happens, the recipient dies prior to the dog dying, the family has the option and of keeping the dog or returning the dog. And I will tell you that the dogs grieve. The dog in North Carolina with the man who had ALS, I honestly was not sure he was going to survive.
Really?
Wouldn't eat. We tube fed him. And it, ultimately he did survive, but he grieved.
Gosh.
So
now, speaking of grieving, one emailer says, what does your guest think about getting especially a puppy and then leaving it alone most of the day? She says, I would love to have a dog, but my husband and I work full time and think it would be cruel to leave it alone all day.
You know, it is very hard. I think with a puppy, that's pretty difficult. I mean, we see that, you know, the puppies really seem to grieve the loss of their siblings in a lot of ways more than their mom when mom goes home. But an older dog, I really think that even if you work, you can still give an older dog, and by that I mean an adult dog, enough attention and affection. You know, they do okay hanging out. They do all right.
What about a puppy?
A puppy, I just think, I think it's going to be too difficult for you and for the puppy,
what
honestly.
What about two puppies?
You know, there's some controversy about that. I mean, two puppies are sort of 18 times the trouble. Because they get messes. But honestly, if you don't mind, if the dogs bond one to the other more than to you as a human being, then you're cool. Because they will bond more to each other. It doesn't mean they won't love you dearly, but they will. But, I mean, I think that's great.
And, because they are siblings.
Right. Or, yeah, they see themselves definitely as siblings.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And you're the parent. But, so, you know, I mean, you can always make it work. And people say, well, I live in an apartment, so I can't have a dog. Sure, you can.
Sure.
You know what? They want to be with you more than they want anything in the whole wide world. So.
Now, here's from Amy in Amarillo, Texas. She says, I'm primarily a horse trainer. I'm definitely in a minority as I use largely positive reinforcement methods, clicker training. I can tell you that sadly, the dominance, be the alpha myth, is alive and well in the horse training community.
Dear God in heaven.
And it is no more biologically or behaviorally valid than it is with dogs. I give some blame to both Animal Planet and RFD TV for perpetuating this false and damaging information. I salute your guest and look forward to reading her book.
Thank you so much. I've got to tell you, I love horses too. We have horses, but the dominance alpha myth has even made its way into child rearing, and there is a new movement that bases raising your child on this whole idea of dominating. And if I can take just a minute and explain what happened there,
surely.
When the DNA, and we were going in the right direction, we were becoming kinder, I think. And then as the DNA project revealed that the only genetic ancestor of the dog is the wolf, and we were able to scientifically prove that, people started saying, all right, let's watch wolves and we'll know just what to do with our dogs. Well, first of all, dogs evolved from wolves, meaning they are no longer the same creatures. But secondly, if you're going to look at wolves, let's look at how wolves function in the wild. We looked at how wolves function in captivity, and it's really in captivity you usually have a bunch of animals who are unrelated one to the other, and so you see lots of scuffles and fights for superiority and for the right to do whatever they want to do. In the wild, it's mama and daddy. And the wolf researchers have been screaming this forever. It's mom and dad and the kids. And mom and dad are sort of automatically afforded respect. They don't get it by physically overpowering anyone. All alpha means in the wild is the one who can do whatever they want. And so we, you know, we got a faulty sort of picture here. And to have it have gone on as long as it has and to have reached into all areas of our society is horrifying.
Now, Jennifer, Carrie in Louisville, Kentucky asks if you can recommend any book on dog training
that
follows your approach.
Well, not necessarily that follows my approach completely, but which is fine. I mean, there anything with a purely positive based, you want positive reinforcement and negative punishment, meaning, you know, absence of reward, not yanking on the leash or, you know, in some way having to try to hurt the animal.
But you use treats just wonderfully.
And you know what? Food is the only thing that we have that communicates immediately to a dog. I'm going to parent you. I'm going to lead you. I like you. You can please me. And you don't have to use it forever.
Jennifer Arnold, her book is titled Through a Dog's Eyes, Understanding Our Dogs by Understanding How They See the World. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Now to Tenasket, Washington. BJ, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
I am first time I ever called anybody, actually, and Jennifer, through a dog's eyes. I wanted to be a veterinarian when I was young, but I ended up being an orthopedic operating room registered nurse. In 2006, I blacked out and hit a tree, and the tree hit me back.
Oh,
and now
I'm
a
below
the amputation with a broken back and some brain damage, and I kind of got messed up. But I am interested, while I'm calling, is to see how I can be a part of, and I guess you all can give me some information afterwards, your program, because I'm 62 years old, so I'm looking for something to do, and hospitals now want me when they look at my resume, but then they see me walk with a limp, they let me go. So I'm looking for, I'm on a 20-acre ranch, and I want to do something, and I
Wonderful.
Love animals. So should I, first of all, consider, I get around pretty good. I weed eat in my yard yesterday, but I'm wondering, should I be selfish and get a dog? That's one thing I'm thinking.
Okay.
And another thing is, what kind of dog should I get? Because I don't fall very often, but every now and then I do. I can kind of get myself up, but it would be nice to have someone there to help me. What kind of dog do you recommend?
Well, you know what I think would be a really great way to do this is we have occasionally dogs that would not necessarily be appropriate in full service situations that might work really well for you. And sometimes we rescue Great Pyrenees, which are fabulous dogs and great at balance. They're also really good at visiting in, you know, hospitals and nursing homes. And if you want to go on our website and fill out an application or call us, we have a 1-800-771-7221. Again, 800-771-7221. And you can say that we talked on the radio and that I asked you to call, and we can take it from there. We'd love to. You sound fabulous. We'd love to work with you.
BJ, good luck to you. And I hope it works well. That number again, 1-800-771-7221. I want to reiterate, I presume, Jennifer, there is no charge.
There is no charge.
These dogs. Now, one last question. A listener wants to know your opinion of the invisible fence.
You know, the invisible fence is a bit of a sticky wicket for me. I know lots of people who have used it very successfully, and I do differentiate between having a barrier that is, you know, remains solid and stationary, and a person holding a remote to shock their dog. The only thing with the invisible fence that bothers me is they can go badly awry. You know, in storms, sometimes they get knocked out. And remember that though your dog may not be willing to cross the barrier to get out, other dogs can get in. And I've known some dogs that have, you know, gone out and then been afraid to come back in. So it just, if it's the only thing you can do, but try something else.
Jennifer Arnold, her book is titled Through a Dog's Eyes, Understanding Our Dogs by Understanding How They See the World. Thank you so much.
Thank you. May I say, I really have enjoyed being here, and I love your listeners. They're fabulous.
Aren't they fabulous?
They are fabulous.
And I love Butch Cassidy.
I love Butch Cassidy, too.
Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.